This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. And to start today, we bring you a message from the National Rifle Association.
Swimming is fun for anybody. But since some of us aren't exactly Olympic champs, signs are posted telling where it's safe to play. Shooting, too, is fun. That's why it's the favorite sport of millions of people. And like swimming, it's a safe sport, so long as we know what we're doing.
That was 72 years ago, 1946. Today, well, today, the NRA sounds a bit different.
I know you're watching, so pay attention. You hate my freedom, my religion, and my country.
You and I didn't choose to be targets in the age of terror, but innocents like us will continue to be slaughtered in concert halls, sports stadiums, restaurants, and airplanes.
We will never see a day for the rest of our lives where that threat doesn't hover above our heads.
We're going to Fisk the New York Times and find out just what deep rich means to this old gray hag.
But you haven't met America. You haven't met the heartland.
No amount of bloodshed will ever satisfy the demons among us.
The transformation of the National Rifle Association hasn't just been a reaction to American conservative politics. It's helped to shape it, and it tells us a lot about the nature of the gun debate that we're having right now in the United States. A growing list of corporations have decided that they don't want to be associated with the messages you just heard there anymore. In a few minutes, a Republican candidate for governor in Georgia reacts and says he's ready to get even with Delta Airlines for ending a discount program for NRA members. But first, the NRA of yesterday and today. Adam Winkler is a professor at UCLA Law School and author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. And he brings us back to the very beginning.
The NRA was begun right after the Civil War by some Union soldiers who thought that the Union had just been outfought by the Confederacy because of a lack of training with firearms, and that we needed to better train the civilians so that the next time there's a war, they could be well trained to defend the nation. But the NRA has changed a lot in the years since, although mostly supporting gun control, at least moderate measures, for most of its history. In the last 40 years or so, it's really turned more extreme.
Well, that's sort of the post-Civil War era, the dawn of the NRA. What about the 20th century? What did the NRA become at that time, in the 20s and 30s, in the pre-war period? And what kinds of policies did they push for?
In the 1920s and 30s, the NRA was a leading gun violence prevention group and, in fact, was behind a nationwide push to restrict who could carry guns on the public streets. The NRA testified in favor of the first federal gun control law, the National Firearms Act of 1934, that banned certain kinds of weapons. And the NRA, after the Civil War, represented a lot of hunters and outdoors activities. They always believed that people should have firearms in the home for personal protection. But they supported reasonable gun control laws, including the Gun Control Act of 1968.
The National Rifle Association has fought long and hard for practical and for sensible gun laws aimed in the right direction. To keep guns out of the hands of the criminal, the juvenile, the mental misfit, the dope addict, the habitual drunkard. The National Rifle Association does not want these people to have guns.
Well, when did things start to change?
Things started to change in the NRA after the Gun Control Act of 1968. The leadership was very moderate and plotted a move to close up the Washington office, retreat from political activity, and move to Colorado Springs to focus on outdoors activities and hunting. This angered a group of hardliners in the membership who thought guns were more about shooting criminals who were coming to get you in a time of rising crime rates than guns were for shooting ducks. And in 1977, the hardliners staged a coup where they took over the organization literally overnight at the annual membership meeting in Cincinnati.
Only life members can vote at conventions. And at the last convention, they were able to vote out the former leadership, which was suspected of having gone soft on the gun control issue. Harlan Carter was voted back in command. The vote gave warning to gun control advocates in Congress that the hardliners were back in charge of the NRA.
Take the guns away from the American citizen. This country will go communist just like Russia or any of your others. It's been a proven fact through history.
The group of people who took over the NRA, including Harlan Carter, who is the leader of the insurgents.
Any national gun law, no matter how innocent in appearance, presupposes a still further growth in a centralized, computerized gun control bureaucracy in Washington, D.C.
We're really dedicated to an anti-gun control version of the Second Amendment, a view that was very extreme, that opposed most forms of gun control, and thought that the main mission of the NRA was not in promoting marksmanship or outdoors activity, but in fighting for gun rights. If we wanted to find one date in American history where not only the gun debate changed, but so much else changed in American politics, in part because of the strength of the gun debate, we'd look at that annual membership meeting in 1977.
Thanks to you, the members and supporters of NRA, no national gun law has passed this year. We will stand together, strong, dedicated, shoulder to shoulder, for what is right.
And what about after that? The high crime of the 1980s, a lot of the political rhetoric at the time was around fear of criminals, no politician wanting to be soft on crime. There was a lot of fear in America. There was a lot of fear in white America, to be frank. Did the NRA's politics track with that climate of fear?
Absolutely. One of the reasons the NRA has been around since 1871 is that it really evolves and changes with the demographics of gun owners. And so after World War II, the NRA was all about hunting because that's where people were using their guns. In the 1970s and 80s, when you have these starkly rising crime rates, you do see the NRA refocus its rhetoric on self-defense against criminals.
The following is a message from the National Rifle Association.
Hello. I'm Charlton Heston, actor, sportsman, and gun collector. This week, President Bill Clinton signed into law the Brady Bill, mandating a 5-day waiting period for the purchase of a simple handgun. The only problem is, while you're waiting for your gun, the criminals are stealing theirs and running amok.
And that really dominates the rhetoric until just recently, where we've seen what was an extreme view of the Second Amendment, that it's about fighting tyranny and so people can revolt against the government in arms. That's become a more central theme of the NRA just recently.
Well, let's talk about the mid-90s then, because it seems like that's when a lot of that new rhetoric came online. Wayne LaPierre, the executive vice president of the NRA, was around back then, who in 1995, in a mailer, I believe, made the famous comment that jackbooted government thugs are coming for your guns. That seemed like an important moment.
That was an important moment because, as I said, there's been a fringe view of the Second Amendment that focuses on fighting government tyranny. It was occasional comments like that one that Wayne LaPierre made back in 1995, but he was swiftly rebuked. Former President George H.W. Bush resigned his NRA membership after that incident, and Wayne LaPierre refocused on self-defense arguments for the Second Amendment until just recently.
A lot of analysts have commented that the NRA wasn't really a captive of the right, that in many ways the NRA helped invent the modern political far right.
The NRA was very much a central coalition partner in the rise of the new right.
To the Ayatollahs of Iran and every terrorist you enable, you might have met our fresh-faced flower child president and his weak-kneed Ivy League friends, but you haven't met America. You haven't met the heartland, where the people will defend this nation with their bloody, calloused, bare hands. And you ought to pray you never do. I'm the National Rifle Association of America.
Although the NRA is officially nonpartisan and has a history of supporting Democrats who supported strong views of the Second Amendment, that's really changed increasingly. And the NRA, especially if you check out its recent NRA TV, you really see an adoption of a much more extreme anti-left view of not only the Second Amendment, but of all sorts of government policies.
This is what liberal leadership gets you. No responsibility, no accountability. We've got people dead from Benghazi. We've got people dead at Parkland. And liberal leadership is at the height of all of it.
And it's strange that we see an increasing amount of rhetoric about how people are coming to take your guns, even though over the last 30 years, you've really seen the gun control movement moderate. And whereas it once supported broad bans on civilian gun ownership, now they're talking about regulating bump stocks and just trying to get universal background checks. No one's talking about taking away handguns or eliminating civilian ownership of guns. But yet that's what the NRA's emphasis has really become.
So much of the NRA's messaging today, when you watch it, doesn't really mention guns at all at times. It certainly mentions the left and liberals and big government and people wanting to destroy the Constitution and take away your rights. Sometimes it doesn't mention the guns themselves at all.
That's right. We're seeing increasingly the NRA is just focusing on the culture wars. For instance, Wayne LaPierre's statement the other day at CPAC was focused on Marxists and leftists and anarchists and socialists who were teamed up with the left to destroy America and take away everyone's rights. Wasn't even focused on the Second Amendment.
Obama promised a fundamental transformation of our country. And you know what? It began with his own national party. A party that is now infested with saboteurs who don't believe in capitalism, don't believe in the Constitution, don't believe in our freedom, and don't believe in America as we know it.
Dana Loesch, when she made that very well-known video that went viral some months ago, wasn't even about gun policy. It was about how people were rising up in violence against the NRA and the right.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, bully and terrorize the law-abiding. The only way we save our country and our freedom is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
So we are seeing a real change and shift in the NRA's rhetoric. It's becoming a much more political organization rather than a gun organization.
We're jumping around in history a little bit, Adam, but let me take you back to 2000 and a famous comment from a famous man, NRA president at the time, Charlton Heston.
So as we set out this year to defeat the divisive forces that would take freedom away, I want to say those fighting words for everyone within the sound of my voice to hear and to heed, and especially for you, Mr. Gore. From my cold, dead hands.
That applause line at the NRA convention, Adam Winkler, echoed throughout the culture. You still hear it today, almost a political cliche in American life. When you hear that old Charlton Heston cut, what do you think about?
Well, that was a really important moment in the gun debate because Al Gore was expected to win that presidential election. The economy was doing well, and he ended up losing, and losing in part because he lost his home state of Tennessee. And all analysts believe that the gun issue was an important issue. He had taken a strong stand in favor of some new gun control measures. And I think that was a moment where the NRA really exercised its political power. It motivated a lot of voters. And here's the key to the NRA. We think about the NRA as a powerhouse because of its money, but its real power comes not just from the money, but from the voters that get swayed by people like Charlton Heston.
Adam, let's talk about gun manufacturers. How important are they really to the NRA now? I mean, it is a membership organization. You said that more important than their lobbying money is the political marching orders they can imbue to their members, essentially. Many analysts have basically branded the NRA as a front group for firearms manufacturers, saying that their policies reflect the profit motives of manufacturers and little more. But is that an accurate picture of what the NRA is?
It's an incomplete picture because certainly the NRA has a very close symbiotic relationship with the gun industry. Their magazines are supported by advertisements by gun makers and gun accessory makers. But I don't think that's the full picture. You have to understand that there's a lot of single-issue pro-gun voters who think of this issue in cultural terms, lifestyle terms, terms. They're supporting gun rights not because they love big gun makers. They support gun rights because they think it's really essential to their identity. And that's the real strength of the NRA, I think.
Adam, there's a script that we've become accustomed to after a mass shooting like Las Vegas or San Bernardino or Parkland or Sutherland Springs. Describe how the NRA operates now when a mass shooting occurs with, let's say, an assault weapon and all eyes in America turn to the NRA for a response.
Well, usually the NRA takes the approach of silence right after some kind of mass shooting because they know that's not a favorable time for the NRA to be engaged in a debate over gun policy. And so they usually say it's an inappropriate time to talk about gun shootings. But of course, there's so many mass shootings that there's really not much time between them to have that kind of conversation. What's happened is in some recent incidents, and especially this Parkland shooting, the NRA has felt compelled to fight back, to defend itself. And so we saw that with Dana Loesch making her comments at the CNN town hall and the CPAC speech by Wayne LaPierre. I think in part because the NRA is seeing that there's actually a little bit of momentum shifting in the gun debate. I don't expect we'll see the NRA moderate its position in any significant way, but we are seeing new political energy and mobilization on the gun violence prevention side. You know, the politics of the gun debate have been very one-sided for a long time. While 90% of the people say they support background checks, it's the 10% that oppose it that are those NRA loyalists who vote on that basis, who organize, get their friends to vote, are really politically active. What we're seeing now is more mobilization on those who favor more restrictive gun laws. And that could really change the gun debate, including making some elected officials bend.
Well, given the contours of this debate now, Adam, let's talk about a future, maybe an imaginary future, where the NRA decides that it's in its best interest to soften its position on some form of gun control, maybe background checks, I don't know. It seems to me that if they ever decided that, it could be nearly impossible to achieve, because once you've participated in the politics of telling people their freedom is at stake, it's pretty hard to go back on that and preach compromise at any point.
I think it does make it difficult. The NRA has really painted itself into a corner. But I will say this. I think the forces that wish for more restrictive gun control laws will take whatever they can get. If the possibility of compromise leads to legislation, gun control forces will be satisfied with that. And the NRA will always be able to count on a group of very diehard gun enthusiasts who will follow the NRA whichever direction it goes.
Adam Winkler, professor at UCLA Law School, author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, today the NRA has millions of politically active members. And we asked you, the NRA members listening, to tell us what the organization means to you.
Hi, my name is Bill from San Angelo, Texas. I'm a recent NRA life member, retired military veteran, and I grew up in a country where guns were a fundamental part of my childhood. I'm very saddened when anyone is murdered, whether it's with a gun or otherwise. I'm also willing to listen to any solution that is likely to be successful, as long as it is sound and does not infringe on our gun rights.
This is Wyatt from Crowley, Texas. In light of all the demonization of NRA members and the NRA itself, I decided to join the NRA for the first time. The NRA is a lobbyist organization that represents my rights and the rights of millions of law-abiding gun owners. And further demonization of them will only bolster our ranks.
This is Nina from Weymouth. No, I am not an NRA member. My husband used to be, and he got so disgusted with the organization that he stopped paying his dues and is no longer a member.
Hi, my name's Brennan Wells from Colorado Springs, Colorado. I'm an NRA member and have been for about the last 10 years, but a large part of that is because I'm also a Boy Scout firearms instructor. I teach rifle and pistol and shotgun to the boys, and one of the requirements is an active NRA instructor membership. So they have one of the finest and most effective education programs regarding the safe use and handling of firearms.
Yeah, this is Ken Winterberger from Anchorage, Alaska, and I was a longtime member of the NRA while they really were a safety, gun safety, and marksmanship organization when they started to get into politics, and they went over the top, and I dropped my membership.
Hi, my name is Jeanette, and I currently live in Ogden, Utah. My concern with the NRA refers to my father. He bought lifetime memberships for every member of our family, including my granddaughter as a newborn. So I wonder what the numbers of true NRA membership is, because like I said, my granddaughter, from the time she was born, was a lifetime member of the NRA.
Now, for some of you who called in, the NRA isn't about politics or lobbying or making a stand on the Second Amendment. Instead, it's about education.
I'm a very active Democrat liberal. I'm an NRA member. I'm an NRA certified safety instructor for rifle, pistol, and shotgun. I run shooting events for women. I wasn't anti-gun before I ever got a gun or went shooting or anything, but I did think negatively of the NRA, but not after I went to them to look at instruction, because I realized that they're the only ones out there who are doing this training, that are promoting the safety.
This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.